Before we get started today, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and TMS coach based in Los Angeles. You can hear her entire story in episode number 188 back in 2021. If you're not familiar with Jeannie, let me introduce you. She used to be a burnt-out high school teacher and struggled for 16 years with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, anxiety, depression, digestion issues, etc., before healing herself completely and leaving her dead-end job. Simply put, she gets it, especially the frustration and overwhelm of not knowing the next steps. And that's why she's by your side the entire time. In her one-on-one coaching program, she's checking in between calls, offering support and accountability throughout the week so that you can be successful. You are not doing this alone anymore. It's the new year. It's time. I encourage you to book a free introductory call to learn about her one-on-one coaching program right away. Go to jeanniecolwin.com, that's JeannieKulwin.com, to book your free call. Also, while you're on her website, check out her impressive testimonials page to see her clients' transformations firsthand. Welcome back. It is the first episode of the new year, 2024. One odd thing about today's recording, I'm back up in my alma mater town of Bellingham, Washington, and I brought my podcast equipment. I'm kind of in between meetings right now to do the intro for this, but I forgot my headphones, and I always use the headphones because it helps me monitor my sound levels and what the things that I'm playing and how they sound and make sure everything's level, and then I can do some stuff in post-production. But I forgot them. So hopefully this is sounding just fine. I think it's probably just sounding just fine. And there's some cars rolling by me and all that kind of stuff, but we're getting through it. I had an awesome new year. I got to go and see the Winter Classic. A buddy of mine from another state hooked me up with some tickets. Jenny and I, we got to go see the Seattle Kraken take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights at T-Mobile Park. So an outdoor hockey game. It was awesome. There were 50,000 people there. And then my beloved, we've had season tickets for 12 years now. Washington Huskies are moving on to the College Football National Championship that happens on Monday the 8th. And couldn't be more excited. So I'm very stoked to see how that turns out. Today's episode is a great interview that I'm calling The Paradigm Shift. And it's with Scott Stiles. Some of you may know him as Scotty Stiles, but he's been around in the peripheral TMS space for a few years now. I came across him a few years ago, and he was simply a consumer of the content at that time, and now he's putting out content on that. And so we get to hear his story, some of the ways that he thinks about this stuff, and then ultimately learn about what he's doing out there in the community right now. So urge you to go check him out on the socials. I'm going to have all of his stuff linked in the show notes. But without further ado, here is Scott Stiles and I talking about the paradigm shift. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. And I have to say that this is like one of my favorite names on there. It almost sounds like it's a name built for television or the radio or whatever. But I've got Scotty Stiles. And if you're in the TMS community, you may have heard the name. But Scotty Stiles from Toronto is here with me on the line. Can you hear me?
Hey, Eddie. Yes, I can hear you. Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. So I've seen your name on the peripheral for years. It's usually been like chiming in on a forum or, making a comment here or there or whatever. But I've definitely seen the name. And again, it's like one of the names that sticks with you. I'm sure like it is your name, right? There's not, it's not something else, right?
It is my name. It's Scott Stiles, but Scotty Stiles sounds even better. So I mean, you can call me Scott or Scotty, it doesn't matter, but yeah, it's a fun name to have. Hopefully, it grabs people's attention and that's kind of good for me, I guess.
Awesome. So I've been watching kind of your rise or ascension in the like TMS coaching, and I've seen like, for instance, I think you recently went through and did the pain reprocessing therapy certification. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I did pain reprocessing therapy, which is Alan Gordon's training. And then I've also done Dr. Howard Schubiner's training. It does involve pain reprocessing therapy and emotion awareness expression therapy. And his program is the Freedom from Chronic Pain program. And then I'm also trained as a holistic life coach, mind body practitioner through Mind Body Food Institute. A few trainings just to, provide further value for my clients and to be really you know, being able to help people with this. Now that I've, you know, helped myself, I feel like it's time to give back to the world. And so that's what I'm doing now. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, yeah, it's good to hear that. I'm excited to dive deeper into your story. Pain reprocessing therapy came up recently because I interviewed Dan Lyman, who I think teaches some of those courses. So it's good to get a little bit more perspective on that. And I'm going to, you know, in 20 minutes or whatever, when we get to that portion, I'm curious to hear some of the stuff that you learned that you think could really be of benefit to the masses. But let's get started. I mean, before I hit record, you talked about how you've been kind of absorbing information in the TMS space for years, but kind of tell us about what was going on with you. How many years back are we talking? And ultimately, like, you know, what were some of the trials and tribulations of going through whatever it is that you went through?
Yeah, of course. So for so many years, I was dealing with musculoskeletal issues, you know, as far back as maybe even being a teenager. And I just always kind of thought, oh, you know, pain is just a part of life. And maybe I slept wrong, or maybe I'm getting older. But it's really odd because I was only 18. What does this mean? What, I'm getting older? And, you know, in hindsight, I can really see that there were probably some emotional factors going on, or just fearing the sensations in general is what was causing these sort of acute flare-ups. And then as years went on, things just intensified, and then eventually the pain just never went away. Of course, I had many of the symptom imperatives, as we know, which are TMS equivalents or symptom substitutions, like, you know, I would have, well, my original symptom would be like back and hip pain, and I would have like foot and shoulder and wrist and neck and, yeah, you know, pelvis, everything like that. And so it was just kind of like a lot of medical mystery, it seemed at the time, a lot of anxiety and panic. And there was a lot of sort of substance abuse involved with that, because, you know, it was just too much to handle this type of pain. It was very, very, very severe. I wasn't able to work and just didn't know what was going on with myself. So I, of course, like anyone would do, sought medical professional and help. And I was referred to sports medicine clinics and physiotherapy and chiropractors and the whole thing. And even a surgeon, to which they, you know, they find things on the MRI and they say, well, you've got bulging discs, spinal stenosis, all of these things that sound very scary. Yet, you know, being in Canada, they're quite conservative and they don't just decide that you should operate. Maybe in the States it could have been different. And
almost assure you it would have been different, but we'll get into that later.
Oh, right. It's so wild. So maybe I'm lucky that I'm in Canada and that this, they take a more conservative approach to not, you know, offering that sort of solution. So anyway, you know, there were some injections and whatnot that had been done, but that provided no relief. And, you know, it's because obviously that created more fear. And the fear is the driver for the pain in a sense, right? So in 2017, I really, you know, decided this is it. I've done everything I can. And I stumbled across Dr. John Sarno's book, The Mind-Body Prescription, in a used bookstore here in Toronto. And I just said, I have to go for this. Like, nothing else has worked. I'm giving up on everything else. It was like quitting, you know, a bad habit, like cold turkey. Like, I'm stopping going to the physical therapist. I'm stopping the sports medicine clinic. I'm just going to, you know, read this book and do everything I can to make it happen, because I had to rely on the success stories of all the people that I'd seen that had come before me. And so that really opened the door. And from then it just expanded, and that was around 2018. And I have to say, you know, we mentioned before we started recording that you were very much a helpful inspiration at that time, because I think our healing journeys started around the same time.
Yep.
And your podcast and Caitlin Michaels, the Mind Body Mastery podcast, were the only two podcasts that were around. And so, you know, I was leaning on that for hope and optimism. And then shortly after that was Nicole Sachs's podcast that came out. So those were the big three that, you know, sort of informed the beginning of my journey in 2018. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. One of the phrases I found myself saying is, my podcast may not be the best, but it is the first. Yeah, now it seems like there's a, you know, there's quite a few of them. And actually there's a guy, I think he's in Ontario. I don't know about Toronto specifically, but, Tanner Murtaugh has a podcast, and he's Canadian, and he is all about pain reprocessing therapy. So it'd be worth checking him out if you haven't connected with him yet.
He actually interviewed me on his YouTube channel.
Oh, awesome. Okay. I didn't even know he had a YouTube channel. That's good to know.
So
I guess, what do you think was about in, because your story kind of sounds similar in terms of like finding the Sarno book. It sounds similar to a lot of people's, but what do you think it was about cracking that book open, and what, just name a couple of, you know, specifics or non-specifics, whatever you prefer, things that jumped out at you from that particular book that said, hey, like, this is definitely onto something, and this is probably more my path.
Yeah. You know, it was hard to grasp at first. I'm not going to lie. It was a real paradigm shift. And, the first time I heard it, I rejected it, like many people do. So the reason why I say it started in 2017 was because in 2015, I'd heard about it and I rejected it. So, you know, I think it was just the fact that I had tried so many other things and there was nowhere else to go.
Yep.
And so it just made a lot of sense too, you know, when they talk about these medical findings and how other people can have the same images of their MRI and not have pain. So really, you just start hearing other people saying, hey, this happened to me too. This happened to me too. And that's how Dr. Sarno really got his rise to fame, was just through all of the anecdotal, all of the stories of people coming forward saying, hey, this works. So you kind of just have to trust the process when it comes to that. And then there were other people that came along, like Steve Ozanich. I read his book. And then, of course, Nicole Sachs, and her confidence just really sold it for me. She's, you know, so adamant the way she speaks. And so I did her journal speak process. And that was probably the biggest breakthrough I had at the very beginning, was using her approach and religiously listening to her material and following journal speak protocols. And it really made a huge shift.
What, so talk about the journal speak piece, because I do get a fair number of people on the podcast that have difficulty with journaling or whatever it is. It doesn't speak to them. They don't tend to find success with it. But I've had Dr. Hanscom on this office talk about how there's, I think he had said this was years ago, but that there's over 1,000 studies on expressive writing, which is just another term for journal speak, but expressive writing, being a solution or being a dramatic cessation of symptoms of chronic pain and illness. What was it about the journaling, and what did you get out of it? Especially, I think for a lot of people, like the writer's block comes in that first 10 days, probably 10 or 12 days. Was there anything that you did to sort of overcome that and have success in this that other people can't find success in?
You know, it's a good question, because I can say I've had journaling work for me and I've had it not work for me as well. You know, when we're journaling to try to get rid of the pain, that's, you know, that's like beating our head against the wall.
Yep.
And you can journal over and over and get yourself even more depressed. So yes, we want to be journaling about these sort of difficult emotions and whatnot, but we don't want to be dwelling on them. And I think when I was having symptom reduction, it was because, you know, I would be journaling about some difficult things or things that I needed to confront that maybe I felt I couldn't say to other people. All these things about, you know, our personality traits and our current life stressors and past stressors. And but as my writing would go on, I would start having this sort of very naturally and organically this self-compassion toward myself. And Nicole mentions that, you know, as her three steps, she says, believe, do the work, and practice patience and kindness for yourself. And so as I'm writing and being very angry, you know, I noticed that I was saying, but this is not fair for you. Like you can have power over this and you can take agency in your life. And that just kind of became this natural sort of way to sort of journal from through a self-compassionate lens. And so I think that was kind of the mechanism that really gave me this ability to empower myself. And then the times that the journaling didn't work, I was being critical of myself in the journaling process. I was putting pressure on myself or shaming and blaming myself. And, you know, now that I know more about this work and pain reprocessing therapy, well, it's no wonder that the journaling sometimes worked or it sometimes didn't, just depending on the sort of intent that I had behind it and the energy and if I was being self-compassionate or not, or even if I was being outcome independent with the writing. Like if I'm just going to write and not care whether or not the pain goes away, that is oftentimes how it would work well. Yeah.
Well, I can't remember her exact quote, but it's something like, God, what is it? It has to do with intent, but it's essentially, is it coming from a place of fear or is it coming from a place of love? And it sounds like what you're talking about is sometimes when you were putting the pressure on yourself to have a productive session or whatever, it's more coming from a place of fear. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think maybe she has said as well, or other people have said, you know, the nervous system responds to an invitation rather than a demand.
Yeah. Yep. You know, maybe this is like, I don't know, hippy dippy or whatever, but I have found since diving into TMS work myself over the last 6 years that that particular approach really translates to a lot of things in life. So if you're, you know, if you're basically, if you're pressing, you're trying to force something, oftentimes that thing just won't happen. It doesn't matter if it's in business or it doesn't matter if it's in fitness. Like a good example would be if you're trying everything you can to lose 10 pounds or whatever. It seems like when the stakes are high and you're putting the pressure on, nothing moves. And then yet, once you're sort of like a little bit more nonchalant about it and kind of lower the volume, weight will just fall off. That example is across all different sorts of places. Have you found, and maybe this is too on the spot, but have you found any examples like that in your life that you can think of over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years?
Absolutely. Yeah. When it comes to the healing journey, that's exactly what maybe prolonged things for me, just being so intense about wanting to get better. The stakes were too high. You know, I needed to lower this intensity. And even with doing the tools, right? Like being religiously, you know, needing to journal, needing to read every single book. You know, I've read every book, you know, as I said to you, I've listened to every single one of your podcasts. And, you know, sometimes at a certain point, we just need to go and live our lives. Yep. and be kind of, you know, loosening our grip on the steering wheel, so to speak. And we're just, you know, lowering the intensity, lowering the pressure in our lives. And, you know, in pain reprocessing therapy, we talk about worry and pressure and criticism as like the big three. And so if we're going around in our life and trying to heal ourselves the same way that we got into pain, you know, we're not really getting anywhere.
Yep. Yeah. And it's such like a funny conundrum, but yeah, totally. If you have gone about approaching your entire life and your approach to everything in this stakes are high, you know, go, go, go sort of thing, what makes you think that you're going to be able to get out of that mess by approaching it exactly the same way? That totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And I want to add too, I had a lot of, personality traits are very huge as well. And I think that was probably what was a big Sarno, sort of Sarno idea behind a lot of what I was going through, and personality traits like perfectionism and people pleasing and goodism, and all of this contributing sort of to this inner rage, this inner conflict. And I think that is a good one to point out, because those personality traits lead to this propensity for having everything, all the stakes being so high in your life. You know, because if you're not perfect, then nothing will be right, and oh my goodness, and everything will be a disaster, and all of those personality traits, they all come from childhood. So it's so challenging to see it, because it's the way we've always been. But that was a lot of the work that needed to be done over the past several years, and it's a lot of that work is happening more, I would even say, recently now, really seeing that these personality traits are coping mechanisms that are no longer working for us. You know, I think I heard you mention the interview today that you released with Dr. Eric Sherman, and was it
Feinblatt?
Yeah, they were talking about, you know, when you're a kid, you know, you're building up this this house to protect yourself and to keep yourself safe, but then as an adult, this house you've built has become a prison. You know, I really loved that analogy. And so, you know, it's, you know, it kept us safe, but now Nicole Sachs would say it's keeping us safe in the most unsafe way. And yeah, it's a maladaptive coping mechanism that we have when these personality traits are just, you know, letting loose, and the perfectionism is creating this inner rage, and that of course turns into symptoms too.
Do you have, if you're comfortable sharing, do you have some examples of some of the personality traits that are a little bit more prevalent with you? That meaning, like, as you were going through this and things you were realizing, what were some of the personality traits that you identified in Sarno's book as an example that, hey, these are definitely me? And kudos and bonus points, by the way, if you admit some that are maybe not so pleasing or not so obvious.
Yeah, I would say Perfectionistic, as I mentioned, being a goodist and a people pleaser, and wanting to sort of, let other people speak first, because if I were to say anything wrong or look stupid, then it would create all of this shame. And so, Sarno talks about not just, anger and rage. He talks about other difficult emotions like shame and grief and deep sadness and other things like that too, that can be very subconscious and repressed. And all of these, personality traits, and being insecure, that's a big one too. If we're very insecure in who we are, all of these things are impacting this sense of who we are. And then we just don't feel safe in the world. And all of these things are just trying to mask and make up for, our insecurities. And so, so I think I really had to find empowerment to see, like, those things, those personalities are not who I was. Those were just, masks trying to keep me safe, all of these things. And I had to find my own empowerment, my own security and confidence, and knowing who I was. And this is kind of the self-discovery that you do when you're unlearning symptoms.
What are some, because one thing that Sarno talks about is it's tough to just completely change who you are, and in a lot of cases is not necessary. Are there certain elements of this personality that you have, maybe they were like, as again, as a kid, they kept you safe. As an adult, they didn't serve you so well. But now that you sort of get the, the jig is up, like you know what's going on. Is there any way that you've been able to use any of those personality traits as a positive now as you're on this side of all of it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we'll always have a propensity to have personalities traits like these, for the rest of our lives if it's a part of who we are. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's nice to please people and be good at what we do and have high standards. But once we realize that we have a certain stress threshold, then we know when to turn it down a little bit. And maybe it's time to set a boundary or take time for ourselves. Not say yes to everything. And so that's kind of the dance that you can do now. And you can still lean on some of those great things, those great qualities, because, being a goodist or perfectionist or people pleaser, it's not inherently bad. I think just the way that I was operating in them created a really dysfunctional relationship with fear as well. So now
Interesting.
I know that I don't have to do those things through this place of fear to keep myself safe. And I think with everything in my life, like, it was just trying to avoid fear. And then if you're looking at the symptom, like, that's fear as well. So really, it was all about fear. And that was definitely stemming from my childhood. I could just add that my dysfunctional relationship with fear came with hiding my sexuality. And as a kid growing up, you think that you could be abandoned. Of course, now I know my parents love me, all my friends and family, it's all fine. But as a kid, who knows what could have happened? This is this battle of our, choosing our authentic self or our authenticity versus the safety of our attachment, as Gabor Mate talks about. So as a child in a child's brain, like, that is traumatic, as and then I later find out as an adult, like, I'm thinking I didn't have any trauma growing up, but that can really shape and impact how your brain works. And it created this sort of dysfunctional relationship with fear that I was always trying to push away. I was always trying to hide that part of myself because I didn't know if it was going to be received well. So yeah, a lot of fear there growing up.
The trouble with that too that you're talking about is, and I've in the last few episodes, there's been conversations with people that I've interviewed where they're, they kind of give that perspective of, I didn't have any trauma growing up. And I would say the same thing about me. I didn't really have any trauma growing up. But then it's almost like it's like self-induced shame too, because if I say I didn't have any, like if I feel shitty about certain things that happened when I was a kid. But then I, as a 37-year-old, I'm telling myself that, oh, I didn't have any trauma. Like there's other people that have it way worse. That in itself can also just be traumatic because you're completely throwing away any of the experience that you've ever deemed as negative. And now like you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place. And Steve Ozanich's work talks so much about like basically being in the, you're sitting in between this conflict. I think he's talked about like the ego and the id, that that those two things are in conflict, and that's when TMS exists. And I don't know. I feel like this comes up a lot as a theme in a lot of these interviews.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's more common for people to just have these little T traumas anyway. It doesn't have to be something catastrophic. You know, I'm a 2 out of 10 on the ACE, the adverse child experience scale. Trauma is just interpreted by your perception of danger around what happened to you.
Yep.
And, you know, whether or not you felt alone in what was going on with your experiences and just shaping how you react to everything in current day, you know, all of these walls that you may have put up to protect yourself from what you went through.
Yep. Yep. Mm. Talk about what you've been working on the last few years, you know, so the years that you're giving, like, yes, it seemed like our issues sort of coincided in different countries, but at the same time, how old are you, by the way, if you're comfortable with saying?
Yeah, I'm 42. Sometimes
oh, wow.
I forget.
Okay.
I think right now I'm 42.
I thought, man, at the oldest, he's going to say he's 37 like me. So you look great. Yeah. I'm not saying 42 is old, but I didn't think you looked 42 at all. but I don't think Jeannie looks anywhere close to whatever she told me her age was either. So,
Jeannie, yeah, she's my best friend. She's very lovely. She's amazing.
Yeah. So what have you been working on? You know, how has your life kind of evolved, your career? You know, what were you doing before any of this versus what are you doing now? I know we mentioned at the beginning pain reprocessing therapy, but I'd love to know kind of how you transitioned and got into TMS work and helping the community as a place, you know, that you're pursuing now at this point.
Yeah, you know, like for so many that have gone through this type of healing journey, they realize that they want to help other people now too. And I thought the healing was over in 2019, beginning of 2020. I was starting to travel the world again. I was no longer agoraphobic. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, everything's working out. And then, of course, COVID hit and the whole world changed. And I had massive symptom flare-ups. My original symptom came back. I felt like I was at square one. It was almost like worse than it had ever been. It got very confusing. You know, I had symptoms that even fooled me as this quote-unquote TMS expert. Yeah. I had new symptoms that I thought, no, that's structural. And oh my God, you know, it was not. I had RSI. I'm like, well, I injured myself. I was swimming every day. And, you know, it was TMS. And so it just created even more learning opportunities. And that evolved into me wanting to do this as a career as well. So if it weren't for all of those horrible things in 2020 happening, I wouldn't be doing this now. And that actually opened up even more doors, you know, learning about this process and learning about somatic tracking and pain reprocessing therapy. You know, none of that was really talked about. Maybe it was a little bit from Alan Gordon back in 2018, but I hadn't heard much about it. And now, of course, I think it was in 2021 that we have this Boulder back pain study where we can really prove the efficacy of PRT. And so that really got the ball rolling for me. I had so many more healing epiphanies with somatic tracking and different types of meditations and visualizations and learning these mind-body tools that you can do, especially when you can do them on a Zoom call. You know, Zoom was not really around and being done before 2020 either. And then seeing that, you know, we can do this and we can help other people anywhere in the world. And so that was when I decided that I'm going to get my training and I'm going to do this. And because I'm so passionate about it. And so, yeah, that is now my mission, is to just, you know, at least spread this word out there and help as many people as I can along the way.
Yeah, when I had Dan Lyman on a few weeks ago, he was saying that when he first got trained in pain reprocessing therapy, that I think he said Alan had told him that he was like one of maybe 50 people in the world, or number might have even been way less than that, of people in the world that had training in this specific thing. And then, you know, fast forward, he says now he's doing a train, I think he said once a month, of like 150 people. So there's now, you know, thousands of people around the world that have been trained in this. What do you think about, and this could totally be a tough question to answer, but what are maybe a couple of the takeaways from that course that really opened your eyes to maybe things that you hadn't thought about in, you know, because the Sarno stuff is, it's great, but it's 35 or 40 years old now at this point. And so how has, what are maybe a couple of things that you learned in reprocessing therapy that maybe helped evolve your thinking even more?
Yeah, you know, it's not, it's funny, they didn't even mention, you know, working with journaling, which surprised me. And it's literally just a therapy that we can use with clients. And so the two of the biggest things are somatic tracking and leaning into positive sensations. And it sounds so simple, but that was what was great about the training, is that they really do simplify it. And it can be more simple than we realize. We don't necessarily have to go digging for this dirt, you know, the deepest, darkest trauma and be figuring out what it is. And sometimes it really is just about the way that we're operating in life and lowering the stakes. And the stakes are very high, and being aware of our internal pressures. And so when we're kind of pulling it all together, yeah, I guess we can see how journaling is effective, because you're addressing those internal pressures. But that is just one way of going about it. And so, yeah, those were the biggest takeaways, really, was the actual tools. So, you know, these embodied approaches to feeling things. And noticing these pressures that we have that are just so subconscious, because we have always been the way that we've been, and we may not notice that we're, you know, putting a lot of pressure on ourselves. And now, of course, if I do get a symptom that pops up, doesn't become chronic, I immediately know, oh my goodness, I'm like putting a lot of pressure on myself, or maybe I'm being really critical, or, you know, maybe I'm not setting a boundary. It's just information. And it's so intelligent that the body is telling us these things. And it really is just the human condition as well. So I love how the work has evolved, because it's a way to sort of just normalize this as the human condition without even calling it a syndrome, without even calling it tension myositis syndrome. This is just how we are.
Yep.
And, you know, we can just tune into our internal state and say, okay, I'm going to feel into this anxiety a little bit. I'm going to soothe myself a little bit here. I'm going to lean into this sensation here. This one's positive. This one's uncomfortable. Do this little dance. And it really is kind of almost magic when you think about it. But once you figure out that it can be done, it all just makes so much sense. Yeah.
Is there a place online that people can find more information about you? Like, do you have social media accounts or a website or anything like that you could share?
Of course. Well, people can find me at How to Heal Chronic Pain. And that's on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. I'm mostly, you know, people mostly will reach out to me in the DMs on Instagram, is kind of like my main hub.
Yep.
And I'm always sharing, you know, free content. I'm providing, you know, I like to create reels and information. I usually on my story will create sort of a tip for people to think about, you know, daily almost. And I've been going live lately with Jeannie. We've been doing this mind-body mingle, where we just kind of hash out things and answer some questions in the community. And so that's kind of what I'm doing there. And it's, you know, just a place to sort of hang out and meet people and keep spreading this word of hope and optimism. Yeah.
Awesome. Scott, thanks for being here, sharing some of your wisdom. Again, you can find him, just search How to Heal Chronic Pain. He's on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. Appreciate you being here. Thanks for jumping on.
Thank you so much, Eddie. Yeah, it's been great to chat with you finally after all these years.
I know. Yeah. We'll keep in touch and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.